Film Vault. Yes, Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. That's Anderson.
Uh-huh.
I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today. Meat and potatoes. Top five pets.
Pets. Have we not done it?
Top five pets. This was suggested by a Facebook listener. Logan, did you get the person who I... We'll get the name in a second. Facebook listener suggested it, which we appreciate. Every once in a while, someone on social media, be it Facebook or Twitter or what have you, will suggest a topic idea that we like. We'll put it in the hopper. And in this case, we thought, my God, how have we not done top five pets? We look back, we had top five animals, top five cute and cuddly animals, Anderson.
Right.
Matt Carter on Facebook.
Matt Carter. Thanks, Matt.
Isn't that the name of the Tusk Monkey movie?
John Carter.
Similar.
John Carter from Mars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I believe was the source material.
All right, so let's do this.
Did you find this to be a fruitful topic, Anderson?
Yeah, it was good. There was going to be some crossover, obviously.
I doubt
done
it.
Some. No, well, I mean, from other lists, from lists in the past.
I was going to say many, many, many pets.
But it was fun, and I kind of went with pets that obviously A, are memorable, or B, evoke some kind of emotion in me, whether it was great sadness or maybe it was triumph with the death of that said pet. There's villains. There will be villains.
There will
Brian,
be.
At least one.
Uh-oh. Crossover.
And I assume that I know at least half of your list.
You can predict half my list?
Yeah.
Or you are familiar with half my list?
I bet I can predict it.
Actually, I'd be
I feel like Star Wars will definitely be involved. I think you might try and get clever.
There will be no Star Wars. In fact, I did my best to I did my best to avoid some of the touchstones from
well
the film
done.
Vault. Some of the Film Vault touchstones. There'll be a couple of movies that have never been discussed, or there'll be one movie for sure that's never been discussed. One movie that I only recently saw and just talked about the one time. So there will be some new blood.
Lengthy. Also ran list that we will also get to because there's a ton that could have been on here. I actually have six, one of which is clever, even though it is considered a pet, but I have a backup for that one just in case because usually I leave it to you to try and be
okay.
Clever.
All right, I do have one clever one.
Only
one though.
Is it robotic?
It is not.
Okay, let's get right to a little flick fashion because
yes.
I got some apologizing to do. I got some shame. I got some self-flogging to get to. Let's do it.
I want
to
hear that.
That's involved in the flick fashion, so do what you do.
Well, good. We're going to confess the flicks we've seen in the past week, starting with Anderson and his self-flagellation.
I don't know about flagellations.
Flagellation is whipping yourself.
All right.
What did you apologize
for? Open my big-ass mouth, as I'm known to do
as
on this
want
program.
To do.
I'm want to do on this program. I do it in many programs, and a lot of time what comes out of my mouth is not 100% accurate, Brian. And also, here's a little thing for you youngins out there. Logan, you can listen up with this one as well. The older you get, the quicker time flies by, and this is embarrassing. But I talked last week about how I don't have a whole lot of respect for Mr. Anthony Hopkins, Sir Anthony Hopkins. I know he's a great actor, but why in the world has he not created anything on his own?
Okay.
Why has he not written or directed something? And that was a leftover thought from 20 plus years ago, Brian.
You haven't refreshed You haven't refreshed that hot take.
Right. I remember having this thought like during his Ivory Merchant filmmaking days when he was
Howard's
End. I remember thinking he's such an accomplished actor that I'm going to see these horribly dull films just because he's in it. And I wonder why he's never made anything himself. That was back in like 92, 93. I was having that thought. And many of you pointed out that, yes, he has done things. Not a lot, but he's directed three things. He had directed one thing at that time of that original thought. I remember looking it up, and it was like some kind of TV documentary. Doesn't count. He's done a couple things since then, and I was not familiar. Now, one of which is called August, which apparently is a very straightforward film.
Okay.
I have not seen August.
Osage County? Did he direct that?
No, just August, okay. Brian. Okay. Just August. What I have seen is a little film called Slipstream.
Slipstream.
Written and directed by Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Oh.
And holy shit.
Did it come to the side of Crow?
Listen to me. I could watch 100 movies, right, where I don't know the directors. And I know that Anthony Hopkins directed one of the 100 movies that I just saw. And it's my job to pick which one
pick
he wrote
one.
And directed.
Okay.
This would probably be my 100th pick.
Really?
Yes.
Dead last. Why?
I would never, ever guess.
What did you expect?
I expected something slow and plodding,
okay.
Perhaps like a biopic.
Merchant Ivory-esque.
Yes, yeah. Because it's Anthony Hopkins.
Sure.
This Slipstream 2007, written and directed by Anthony Hopkins, which I muscled through, and I'm not sure if I liked it or not. I know that I laughed out loud a few times, and I was engaged the entire movie. That says something.
That says something.
This is such a mess, this movie. And it is the closest thing I've ever seen to a Lynch, Oliver Stone, Coen Brothers.
Wow.
With a dash of Fear and Loathing, Brian. It's Hopkins doing this thing about a writer. He's an old-timey writer, and he's writing a movie, and it slips into what's real, what's fake. He actually ends up on the set of this movie
that is
produced by John Turturro. Not the John Turturro, but he is acting as the producer, and he is fucking hilarious in this movie. He nails it, as he always does. Christian Slater's in this. There's also a 1989 movie called Slipstream. This is with Mark Hamill and Bill Paxton. This is not that. How in the world did I ever say that he never created anything?
2007.
It's the closest thing to Natural Born Killers.
We were doing the Film Vault at that time.
The closest thing to Natural Born Killers, as far as editing goes, that I've seen since.
So I'm guessing it's a bit manic.
And it's 13 years after. It's like super quick cuts, a lot of inner cuts. Like flashbacks to the past of like Richard Nixon on TV, and then it'll like go to Jeffrey Tambor and Christian Slater rolling up like they're in a Corvette, but then it'll just a quick flash and it becomes a different Corvette, and then a quick flash and it's a different color Corvette. It's supposed to be inside the mind of this writer who's creating all these different characters and different options and the insanity that goes with it. And
yeah, but you know, as a writer, like as soon as you think of something, you start to think
I would never dream of trying to make it, you know, onto screen, trying to represent that on the screen.
Right, but I'm imagining your process as a writer, at least partly, includes as soon as you think of something, you start to think of two or three alternatives. Like, yeah, he pulls up in a red Mustang. Oh, wait, no, it's a blue Mustang. No, wait, no, it's a white.
But you don't hear any voiceover, and there's no explanation. He's not slowing it down for the audience. Like, it's just happening. And it's not ever really that clear that this is going on in this man's head. Because there's a lot of crossover. So you got quick cuts, inner cuts. You got Nixon. You got Corvette changing colors. You got body snatchers. Christian Slater, like I already said. Jeffrey Tambor. John Turturro. Dolly Parton lookalikes. We all fucked up. The fact that we don't know that this movie exists. The fact that Sir Anthony Hopkins made something
daring.
It must have. Because it's got a decent cast. And Anthony Hopkins, I don't remember hearing a word about it. I would have heard about it if it came out this year. Because I'm really combing through every single release for the most part. But when it came out in 2007, which we had just, well, we were doing the Film Vault over on 97.1 that year. Right. So it's embarrassing, and I'm ashamed. And I actually looked up the editor, whose name is, I was wondering if like it was just going to be like the editors took the film and tried to save it or something. Michael R. Miller, who's got a pretty good, he's directed a lot of things. Okay. Most recently, Infinitely Polar Bear. He also did one of my favorites, Raising Arizona, back in the day. Slipstream, of course, we already mentioned that one.
Slipstream.
Yeah. Slipstream. Okay. Sorry, Soul Plane. He edited Soul Plane.
He's diverse.
Yeah, he's diverse. He, you know, a good director. Stigmata. He edited Stigmata.
A good editor will get 5 or 6 projects a year.
And a good director is going to, you know, have final say on a lot of those edits. And I have to imagine, you know, seeing a handful of these movies that this editor has cut, nothing is close to the style here. So I have to imagine this is all the insanity that comes. I would have never guessed Mr. Anthony Hopkins. Sir Anthony Hopkins had so much to offer in the creative.
Interesting.
Funny. It was very fun. Especially stuff. This should have been on top 5 movies about movies that we did.
Interesting.
Because it's the stuff on set is hilarious.
Hmm. Did you like it? So you said you have two minds.
I don't fucking know.
Can you stream this? How did you get a hold of this?
I spent $4 while shaming myself on Amazon. I'm like, I have to watch one of his two movies. I'll watch his most recent one once I realized my gaffe, because I definitely wanted to bring it to the table this week.
Gaffe.
And, geez, you guys would never guess. You'd never guess that Anthony Hopkins made this thing. It really gets rolling. That second act was very enjoyable for me. There's this diner scene where Tambor and Christian Slater come in. They're like old-time gangsters almost, and it gets tense at times, but it's just... And then there's a death of one of the lead actors, and the reactions of John Turturro as the maniacal, crazy producer. It's very funny. It's very wry, and you would never guess. Like I said it before, I'll say it again. You would never guess this. This is what... How Anthony Hopkins,
the mind of Anthony Hopkins,
how he sees Hollywood, because it's about his craft. Sure. It's about where he makes the bacon. Weird. Slipstream, 2007.
Okay,
who knew?
Worth $4.
Shame on me. For me, because I got to talk about it right here. if I was a listener, it depends on how valuable $4 is. You're not going to like finish it and going, wow, what a great movie. But you're going to finish it going, wow, I can't believe what I just saw out of okay. that man's head.
Hey, some people, that's worth $4.
It was almost like 5 or 6 movies in one. Like he just tried to get all of his creative juices out in one fell swoop, in one picture. And from all accounts and everything I've read and talking to people since that have seen August, his 2005 movie or whatever, much different, much slower paced than what you would expect. Oh, crazy man you are, Mr. Hopkins.
I saw an odd film as well. Very different from what it sounds like you saw.
Everything's different from Slipstream.
A very odd film, which I believe you've seen. I don't know if you talked about it on the Film Vault or not, but I saw The Lobster.
Oh,
The Lobster.
Let's talk about The Lobster.
The Lobster came out in May of this year. It is directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, director of Dogtooth.
Dogtooth and Alps. Everyone, hey, you can all skip Alps, guys. You can all skip it. It's available, I think, on Amazon or Netflix, okay. Fox, one of the two, but not worth your time.
The Lobster is on DVD. I sent away for it. It is starring Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz, John C. Reilly, Ben Whishaw, who I recognize from Cloud Atlas. Mm-hmm. Colin Farrell inspired me to for a top 5 list. I texted you and you said, yeah, let's do it. Top 5 actors cursed by good looks.
Oh,
he's a good-looking man. As a result, I don't think people take him seriously as an actor. And
Colin?
He brings a specific flavor to this movie. And if you're a fan of that flavor, very wry, very dry, wrong free of any winks at the audience.
Yes.
This is comedically on the comedic spectrum, 180 degrees away from Horrible Bosses, where he was, you know, the comb over guy with the gut. He was the boss.
He was doing the shtick.
Yep. He was hamming it up. Here he is as dry as a bone.
Yes. I got to tell you, probably the biggest laugh or my favorite laugh that I've had. Is that a thing? You can have a favorite laugh?
Yes.
I think maybe my favorite out loud funny moment that I've seen in a movie this year comes from The Lobster.
Oh, which moment?
The kicking the little girl. That was so precious to me. You should be happy you're not going to limp your father. It was so well placed. I love the first act of this movie, and then once it leaves the hotel, I lost interest.
I laughed when the maid comes into the room and does what she does to Colin Farrell. Mm-hmm. It's like, please, not today. It's terrible.
There's a lot of really dry humor in this.
I should give The Lobster's premise, right? Because it is so unusual. If you guys don't know what The Lobster's about,
there should be more movies like this where they just take a crazy premise. No,
I'll give the basic premise because the movie unfolds.
Even if it wasn't directed by this guy, I would have wanted to see it just by the premise alone.
The basic premise, and again, it unfolds with a lot of twists, or not twists, but wrinkles, a lot of rules and wrinkles. Colin Farrell exists in a world.
Alternate universe.
In a fantasy world an alternate universe, where you must find true love by a certain point in your life, or else you will be turned into an animal of your choosing.
Yes.
And the animal he has chosen is a lobster for very, very good reasons. Yes. He has thought it out.
And, you know, I don't think it was a mistake that they chose the lobster because that is known as a monogamous animal in the animal kingdom.
That's right.
Much like the swan.
Lobsters mate for life.
Much like penguins, at least annually, they will only be with one.
Much like humans.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's go get some more. You know what I'm saying?
Up top. In the opening, he's meeting with the intake person, remember, from the hotel? Because they all live in a hotel. It's actually kind of reminded me of the 120 Days of Sodom or whatever it was.
Similar set pieces.
Because they're all living in this hotel together, being paired up and forced into activities, blah, blah, blah.
Trying to find similarities with other...
You have to find commonalities, yes, or else the match won't work. So...
Felt very Charlie Kaufman-esque.
Very Charlie Kaufman-esque. I actually wrote down that this felt like P.T. Anderson meets early Coen brothers. This is but Charlie Kaufman's about as good as you can hit that target right there. Mm-hmm. Extremely deliberate pace. I would say bordering on slow. It dares you to look away. Very, very deliberately paced film. At a certain point, I looked up and I thought to myself, Jesus Christ, there's more than an hour to go.
Yeah.
It is.
And that last hour doesn't stick the landing, as we say.
So... hard to recommend. Is it enjoyable?
As a 30-minute short where they're stuck in the hotel and they wrapped it up in the hotel at the end of the first act, I would actually recommend a 30-minute short that's streaming for free.
There's 30 minutes of great stuff in here.
Yes.
There's 30 minutes of highlights in this movie.
It's satire.
It's 2 hours long.
It's heavy satire, and I think that he might have gotten a little bit caught up on on what he was trying to say once they left the hotel.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because my main issue with the movie, question, I guess, if you want to call it that, was what is this movie trying to be and trying to say? Is it a commentary on societal dating, like
the norms, I think.
Norms, or is it a comment on a satire on how we fall in love, like how people meet up or match up, or just pressures or society? I don't know. It seemed to be a little bit.
I think it was trying to challenge the status quo, and he was trying to make us look at it from another angle and looking at it insane. I think that if he had his way, people would leave that theater or leave the theater after seeing the movie and going like, "Wow, we really are just falling into the trap of monogamy.
We're just animals after all." Yeah. That said, I appreciate any movie that is different, that is daring, and this movie is daring in the sense that it has a wacky premise and it sees all the way through and it never sort of flinches or winks at the audience. I appreciated it more than I liked it, and I think if you're into odd movies or odd, a little bit different movie-going experience, this might be a movie you might be interested in.
I've seen three of his films now, and this one is the second favorite. By far and away, Dogtooth is the one that I have the most confidence in recommending.
Dogtooth is a better movie.
Alps has a great premise as well. Here's the premise. It's an acting troupe, a troupe of actors who they go into your house and they get to know the habits and the similarity. They study a loved one who might be dying soon, right? Who's terminal. And then they fill in for that person once they die to help the grieving get past the death.
It's a great premise.
It's a great premise. He doesn't stick with that premise very long. It becomes a whole other thing, and I lost interest, and it was really tough to get through Alps. So,
yeah. Alps. The Lobster. Appreciate that it was different.
What else do I got here?
What else do you got? You and I saw a film together.
You want to do that one? You want to do that one?
So as it works out here on the Film Vault, every once in a while, when we do our gambling, Anderson and I will tie. We'll have a score that's either exactly the same or exactly the same distance off from the correct answer.
Which, in effect, makes Logan the winner.
That's
and
right.
He's been winning more than you lately. How's that
That
feel?
Is true. I'm on a dry streak. Logan, what's Anderson's streak out these
dry.
Days?
I don't know. Look it up. Okay. Hang on a second.
Mike Kolf keeps our books, and we appreciate it, Mike.
I'm killing
you. Really are. You're like, I think you're five of the last six, or maybe even more.
All right, let's get back to the
that as it is.
Yes,
let's Logan
payoff
assigned
for
us
that.
A film.
Thank God
Logan
we tied
us a film
because we got Logan assigned us maybe the best thing he's ever brought the program.
You think so?
As far I had as to break my losing streak on that.
Holy fuck, was that movie? I'm once again furious at myself. Furious at everyone else for not seeing Fat Kid Rules the World.
Fat Kid Rules the World, directed by Matthew Lillard.
I knew this was right up Anderson's alley specifically.
This is
such
Anderson.
A sweet movie
this
in
is
the
an
best
Anderson
possible
movie.
Way.
2012, directed by Matthew Lillard, starring Jacob Wysocki, Matt O'Leary, Billy Campbell, based on the 2003 young adult novel by K.L. Going about a 300-pound teenager and his unlikely friendship with a punk musician.
Yes.
Anderson and I was many times during this movie thinking to myself, Anderson's going to love this. This is an Anderson movie.
Well, I mean, if I read the script, I'd be like, yeah, it's a cute script, whatever. I don't know if I'd really fall for it if I just read the script. It really what drives it home and makes this a movie worth watching, worth paying $3 or $4 for, I think, is the performance by Matt O'Leary as Marcus. So the story is real simple. It's a fat kid. Like Brian said, he's in high school. He has no friends. He lives with his dad and his brother, his younger brother. And you get the sense that something tragic went wrong. And you immediately are like, where's the mom? Why is there no mom? Great little nuances and little details. Every time
I love the dad character.
Every time Troy comes home, first place he goes is the fridge. Every single time. And it's not like they're poking fun at this fat kid. They're just showing his habits and how he got to be so huge. He's, a horny kid in high school, but he has no friends and no prospects. And he's trying to kill himself in the beginning of the movie. And this junkie, essentially a young kid also, saves his life, pushes him out of the way of a bus. And then his maniacal maniac ways. He's mania.
Maniacal.
Maniacal. He's a manic person.
He is manic, yes.
Kind of like a Kurt Cobain type character.
Bipolar, seems like.
Takes place in Seattle?
I thought it was.
It was Seattle.
Yeah, because there was like Seahawks paraphernalia.
And now this kid, this junkie kid is like, hey, fat kid, you owe me your life. You owe me a favor because I saved your life.
Yeah, but it's not, it's funny, Anderson. I'm thinking about someone who hasn't seen this movie and hearing what you say. He's actually, this Marcus character is really charming. Like
I was going to bring that up. Like he could have been.
He's essentially homeless. But
that's why his character really makes or break this movie. Because you could easily cast the wrong guy and he could have come off as snarky and unlikable. This fucking kid is awesome. Do you know where we know him from? We've seen him before.
Where?
He's the oldest son in Frailty.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, he's all grown up.
Oh, he's all grown up now. And you know what? I'm also pissed that why don't we know his name? Why don't we see him in more stuff? Because he's fucking great.
Matt O'Leary. I did not know that.
Kid's great.
I did not like this movie as much as you. This to me was a perfect 3-star movie out of 5. It was just kind of good enough.
At least a 4-star movie.
Like I said, many times.
It's got great performances. It's got a great story. If I wanted to nitpick, and it's pretty easy to do so because there's definitely shortcomings. Matthew Lillard's not a great director, and somebody should have told him not to. All the fantasy sequences, I hate them in any movie, and they're all throughout this movie, and it takes a lot of time and energy to shoot them as well, and it was just wasted.
Yep.
Like every time that he would think about killing himself, we'd see him kill himself, and then it would come back to, oh no, he didn't.
Oh, it was just his dream sequence.
It's so hacky. I hate it.
I didn't like it either.
It didn't need to be. Every time that happened, it would take away from the movie.
Speaking of things I didn't like that took away from the movie, can you imagine what my first problem was?
It was probably the ages.
Oh my God. The 17-year-old kid who was played by a 22-year-old. By the way,
big fucking deal.
Yes, big deal. I agree. The kid was not a 22-year-old man child. He was a man. That was a man playing a 17-year-old. And then
Talking about? Matt O'Leary?
No, the main kid. But then when the other kid, when Matt O'Leary came around, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he's clearly much older, but okay, fine. He's not in high school anymore.
You didn't know kids in school that looked older? They had like mustaches and whatnot? It could be that kid.
Especially the big guys.
He's closer to 30 than he is to 18, and he's playing 18. He's mm-hmm. a 25-year-old man who...
Well, no, he's 29 now, and when
he's
25 movie was
at
made,
the time. Mm-hmm. Very upsetting.
All right, Brian.
Very upsetting. That said,
you know, you look probably very old, senior in high school.
I really did, actually.
I bet you looked like late 20s.
I walked in the teacher's lounge many times.
I bet you did.
Unsuspected.
Absolutely, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
With that shimmering head of yours.
That's right. Changed my grades.
Is this why you have an anger about it? Because like, you should be the only one that's allowed to look older?
That's right. Not because of my own bad experiences, because how dare anyone else besides me?
It's funny that you let yourself get all caught up on this, because it's a minor detail.
I tried to move on, but it was
the
first thing.
There's this, Brian. They're also pretending to like be a junkie. He's also pretending to live in Seattle.
Imagine my fury now.
The dad's actually pretending to be his son, his father. It's not really his son. Is that okay?
Yeah, you've thrown me for a loop. My world is crashing.
You're right, though. You said the dad was great.
I love the dad.
It would have been so easy to, you know, I'm sure it comes from the novel, but it would have been so easy to make the dad, who's an ex-Marine, this hard-nosed guy who just says no, 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 and they're, you know, doing everything behind the dad's back.
He knows he's trying to, he's having trouble
he's
with
so
it. He's
so sympathetic.
Knows he's having trouble trying to reach out to his son. At one point, he buys him a drum kit because the kid wants to be a drummer in this punk band. He's like, I don't know how to play the drums. He's like, don't worry, it'll be great. And he's recruiting him to basically play the drums poorly in a punk band. And
he just wants to see his kid find something that he's good at or passionate about or finds worth in living for.
It was kind of like Cool Whiplash. Because the kid's fat.
Cool Whiplash? Oh, because like the cool whipped cream?
Yeah. I worked hard on that.
That's
man.
A real
I worked,
stretch.
I worked hard on that.
I'm sorry that you worked so hard on that.
I thought about
kind of like Matthew Lillard working hard on the fantasy sequences.
You should have seen me after I thought of that, sitting back.
It's not even that good because it makes me think like, woo! It's me. I'm sitting, my initial thought and everyone else's initial thought is going to be, what's his name? Teller.
Miles Teller.
Miles Teller is pretty cool. Why is he not? Why is this fat kid cooler than Miles?
Cool Whip Lash.
Yeah. If it were really punching the face of it being like a fat food, it would be better. Sorry, buddy.
I almost dislocated my shoulder patting myself on the back.
I love this movie. I really wish it was streaming so everyone can give it a shot. It really lives or dies on Matt O'Leary's performance. Despite his age, he was phenomenal. He was just such a likable.
Yeah.
What's going on?
What's going on?
Is that my microphone?
That's you. That's you. I didn't like it as much as you, Anderson, but I liked it. I think we can both agree this was a decent movie.
Okay.
You liked it a lot more than
me. Yeah, it's a solid 4-star movie, maybe 4-star plus for me. Okay. I'm upset that I haven't seen it. I wish there was more movies like this. That one of my favorite lines is the dad, because the dad is so straight and narrow. We've seen this character so many times. We rarely see this father character with a heart. You know what I mean? Yeah. And
it would be easy for him to be a caricature.
His fat son's friends are coming over to pick him up to take him to a show, and he interrogates them all. He shakes them all down, essentially. He says, all right, if you're going out taking my son out, let me see your driver's licenses.
I now know where you live.
That was the greatest line. I now know where you both live. It was fucking great. So, Logan, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. It's an... It's an homage to SLC Punk, which SLC Punk 2 came out earlier this year. It's an hour and 15 minutes. I still have not seen it. Poorly reviewed. By the same director as SLC Punk. Have you seen SLC Punk?
I actually have never seen that.
Get out of my house. Please leave the studios.
You have another film?
No, I'm done.
You know? That's all you got?
That's all you got, right?
There's only three films.
I got a third film.
Wait, what half?
I got something to talk about.
What half?
A little movie came out called War Dogs.
War Dogs.
War Dogs. You seen War
Dogs? Did not see War Dogs.
This is a Brian movie.
Really?
This is a Brian movie.
It only got 60-something percent last we checked.
That's
on
Rotten Tomatoes. That's 2 out of 3. It's not bad.
That's a good point.
2 out of 3. War Dogs, directed by Todd Phillips, starring the aforementioned Miles Teller, as well as Jonah Hill. Saw this one with the wife. Saw it with a packed crowd. Really? Oh, you know what I got to do? Hmm. All right, after this, I got to apologize.
To whom?
To the listeners. I've been getting angry emails from...
If you're going to apologize to the listeners, it's going to be a long segment.
From comic book movie-loving listeners. So I'll get to that in a minute, because I was about to use the term mouth breathers again. Which,
people don't like that.
No,
people
don't
like that.
I'm trying to bring it back, because I heard it for the first time in years used in Stranger Things,
okay,
which you don't understand. But mouth breathers, it's strong. And I use it pretty loosely.
What percentage of your phrases and or thoughts come from Stranger Things, South Park, or Bill Burr?
98%.
Okay. That's what I thought.
How dare you?
Logan, easy, buddy.
Stop pointing out the fact that Logan might have breathed through his nose.
It was the Bill Burr reference.
Mm-hmm. Mouth-breathing cunts.
All right, easy.
That was Bill Burr.
Yeah.
You like that?
This is clam breathers.
All right, so, Brian, that was very rude. Miles Teller, Jonah Hill star in War Dogs, the true story of a couple kids who made a bundle of money back in the 90s, trafficking drugs essentially, but legally weapons.
Drugs or weapons?
I say drugs. Yeah. I'm throwing for a loop because I'm thinking about mouth breathers and upsetting people. Why do I care if I upset people?
But trafficking often follows with the word drugs.
Yes, so no, not drug trafficking, Bri.
Sorry.
I misspoke. I was rattled about the whole mouth breathing thing, but no. Weapons. I almost said drugs again. Weapons. They're trafficking weapons, much of the time legally, much of the time illegally, as you learn in this movie. Todd Phillips is doing, obviously, he's a giant fan of Scorsese. I guess I could have assumed that. However, I didn't see Scorsese leak into any of his other films. Now, a couple years ago, American Hustle was my favorite movie of the year. David O. Russell was doing his best interpretation of a Martin Scorsese there. I guess an homage. Same thing's going on here with the VO and the freeze frames that go on. It looked like Goodfellas. It wasn't just a Scorsese. It was like a Goodfellas homage. And you can't help but think about the Wolf on Wall Street, white men behaving badly, because there's a lot of that in this movie as well. So it's a couple Scorsese joints.
And Jonah Hill's in there. So he's
and
kind
Jonah
of
Hill's
the point
in
home.
There too. Yeah. So about a halfway through this movie, I'm struggling with it, not really enjoying it. There's a whole backstory to the way that I saw this as well. It involves buying a seat that wasn't a seat because it was supposed to be where the wheelchair goes because the theater was almost sold out. So the wife was sitting by herself in the back row. I was sitting next to a mouth breather up in the front row because the seat that I got I ended up turning in my wheelchair, because there's this thing that people don't even know. Many people might not know, but AMC, like, they open up the back row like within the last 10 minutes before the movie starts.
The back row?
The back row where the handicap seats are. The wheelchair accessible seats
are. It's the ones you can basically walk right into.
Yeah, I bought a seat there, two seats. Jillian had a seat and I didn't have a seat. It was just an empty space. And I asked the front lobby if I could borrow a stool, and they said no, and then they made me get another seat. So I turned it in, and I wasn't gonna be anywhere near the wife, and there was a man literally spilling into my seat, and they're big seats, and he's spilling into it. Brian,
big man,
he's a large man, and he was spilling over. So I just found a spot. Anyways, long story short, I was a little bit distracted and miffed to begin with, and then here we go, a couple white kids, and Jonah Hill in particular, he's a sociopath. And like, and I realize this and notice this almost immediately. I'm like, this guy, Miles Teller's character says, you know, he has this gift of becoming whoever you want him to be.
Okay.
So, like, you know, there's a scene with him and his partner, his business partner and all this, who's this Jewish guy who runs a bunch of dry cleaners, played by, what's his name? Why would I do that? Why would I back myself in? The guy from Usual Suspects, names. You don't see him very often.
Oh, Pollock.
Kevin Pollock? Kevin Pollock, thank you.
That Pete Postlethwaite's been dead for 3 years.
And, you know, when Jonah Hill's character is meeting with him, he's like becoming this this good Jewish boy who's, you know, everything that he does is inspired by from his reading of the Torah. So I'm thinking this is just a horrible sociopath fuck, because I've had these guys in my life. I've never met a female, but I've never been close to a sociopathic female. Usually they're dudes.
Pretty rare, actually, right?
And halfway through the movie, I'm like, they're just kind of glorifying this guy. Now, Jonah Hill was great, and he was, you know, the mouth breathers in the audience were laughing at his laugh because he had this very particular laugh. I was upset with the whole Scorsese thing. Long story short, I'm not really doing the movie justice, but by the end, it won me over, and I actually quite enjoyed it. I learned a bunch about how the inner workings of military grade weaponry, and then how it was traded back and forth, and how it continues to be so today, and why that all came into being. This essentially eBay for military components on the internet. It was very interesting. There's a lot of backstory, and you learn a whole lot. I was just afraid. I was upset with the white glorifying these white fucks. Not even white, just dudes, bad dudes,
bros,
essentially
mouth breathers.
Super smart. But Miles Teller, he was a sympathetic character, and you kind of felt for him. But by the end, yeah, I was satisfied by the end.
Yeah, so it's good.
I enjoyed it, and the wife liked it even more than I did, which says a lot. Because this is not past the Bechdel test. Miles Teller's character's got a hot foreign girlfriend with a thick accent, but you never see her talk to another woman. And every time she's talking to him, you know, she's just kind of shaming him, and it's a bro movie for sure.
Okay.
But it's good. You learn a lot.
All right, should I see it in theaters?
I think you'll love this movie. Okay. I think you'll really like War Dogs.
Good. Yeah. Man, I like Todd Phillips' movie for the most part.
I didn't love it by any means.
Hey, speaking of Todd Phillips' movies,
have you seen Hated?
Have not. Yeah, you made me see it.
Okay.
Or I don't know if I made me see it or if I saw it on my own, but I enjoyed it for what it was. I don't know if I would go back and watch it over and over again. But
I
think you gave me the disc.
I don't know
where else would have got it from.
Assuming that most people are familiar with War Dogs and the story behind it, right?
Sure. It was pretty. It's in 3,000 theaters, I'm sure.
Okay.
I think
I didn't go over the whole. I don't like that in reviews where people, you know, they start off by telling you the entire fucking story. I don't need to do that. I didn't want to do that over here.
So I think we think more.
Once you get past the fact that, yeah, it's kind of a.
If it's The Lobster, it's a movie people may not have heard of or maybe vaguely familiar with.
But with War Dogs, what you got to do is go in knowing that it's in many ways an homage to Scorsese. And once you get past the fact that it's almost distractingly an homage to a Goodfellas. And just kind of settle in and enjoy the characters and enjoy some of the goings on. I've thought back to it a few times. Every time I look in my side view mirror and I see objects are closer than they appear, I think of this movie.
Okay.
It's only been 6 days, but I chuckle a little bit every time I look at my side view mirror. War Dogs, not the mess that I kind of was going in thinking it was going to be.
Speaking of going to see movies with the wife, speaking of the wife liking movies more than me, even though still liked, speaking of reminding me of Todd Phillips movies.
Are we doing another movie here?
Yeah. I bought three.
Oh, yeah. Well, why'd I wrap it up?
Have you seen Bad Moms?
I'm not going to do that.
You may have to.
Why do you? It's such a rerun. When you do that, you do the little head twitch and you smile and you go, you may have to.
You may have to.
Stop it.
Well, good news. I haven't won in 5 weeks, so it may be a while before you have to. But let me tell you something, Anderson. I'm telling you right now as a man whose film opinions you respect and trust.
Who's that? Logan? You got something to say? Logan's going to do Bad Moms right now?
Bad Moms is good.
Bad Moms
is good and it's funny.
Oh, you?
Yes, me.
Oh, yeah.
Good, and it's funny. Yeah. Written and directed by John Lucas and Scott Moore, writers of The Hangover, Todd Phillips film, starring Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell, Catherine Hahn, Christina Applegate, and Jada Pinkett Smith. This was a pleasantly surprising movie, Anderson.
Yes, so that's why you liked it, because you thought it was going
to
be bad.
I was expecting it to be below average, and it was actually quite...
Christy not have any friends?
Why you ask me? Oh, because to go see it with?
Why'd you go see it with her?
I think at the time the Rotten Tomatoes... Logan, look up the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Stop it with RT. Like we're too reliant
like
on the RT.
70, maybe higher than 70%. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I'll go check it out. And Christy really wanted to see it, so why not?
61.
There you go.
War Dogs higher.
Like I said, there were many opportunities, Anderson, for this movie to go off
what
the rails.
What a whipped little bitch you are.
I liked it.
You're not seeing War Dogs, you're seeing Bad Moms. You whipped little bitch.
It was a couple weeks ago, actually, before War Dogs was out.
Mm-hmm.
It was consistently funny. Okay. It was also really insightful. Like, this is a movie that actually took time to kind of understand its characters, right. And it wasn't just a series of wacky adventures. That's what I was afraid it was going to be, was just a series of wacky mishaps. Oh, they're in the grocery store, and then there's some sort of kids are doing something wacky, and now their husband's doing something stupid, and now it wasn't that. There was some real insight in this movie. The characters were real, and the situations were very funny. I was very pleasantly surprised with this movie. I heard a couple of morons describing this, oh, it's just like Bridesmaids. It's nothing like Bridesmaids. Mm-hmm. It's actually, aside from being like an all-female cast, it has nothing to do with Bridesmaids. It's really similar to Old School. It's something that sort of that vein of people who have moved past a certain stage in their life find they're unhappy in their life and mm-hmm. they want to go back to a certain stage. You know what I mean? So right. They're sort of recapturing some youth. The only part I didn't like Christina Applegate's character was... It was out of another, you know, in 80s movies where a character had to be bad just because the plot required her to be a villain to do villainous things. Mm-hmm. Her motivation, they gave her at the end, they gave her a little moment at the end, like, oh, you see, this is why she's doing weak. No. It just didn't work.
Could have been better.
That was the only part of the movie that didn't work for me. This was a pretty good movie. All right. And I think the 61% is one of those you have to kind of factor in, like, I think a movie like Bad Moms, you're expecting it to be pretty lame, and it was actually quite good.
So that's why it's as high as it is. Probably people went in thinking one thing.
I totally think so. Mm-hmm. I also think...
So it should be like 50% if everyone was expecting it to be
well
good.
Well below.
Really?
I think you prejudge this movie as a bad movie. I think most people...
No, but what I'm saying is you're saying it's inflated because people went in thinking it was going to be bad, and then they ended up liking it, so they gave it a good score.
I think some people begrudgingly liked it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Here's the sad state. I think you'll agree with me on this. The sad state of summer movies. This is absolutely in contention for top five for me. This is not a strong summer for movies, and this is absolutely in contention. I don't know if it'll make my top five, but this is a movie I'll have to consider. I laughed a lot at this movie.
Interesting. All
right. You know what? You may have to see it, and you will not regret it. This is.
Yeah, I'm not seeing
what is the other one I made you see? Central. This is better than Central Intelligence.
Well, that says nothing, Brian.
But Central Intelligence is okay.
There's two funny scenes in that movie.
You have to admit that was okay,
Brian.
Anderson.
No. All right, let me get to mouth breathers real quick, and I guess somewhat of an apology or more of an explanation to our comic book film loving
Logan?
Brian. I'm in the middle of a sentence. In the middle of a sentence.
He nodded yes. And give me a thumbs up.
Stranger Things, Logan. You can weigh in here because you've seen it.
Now we can talk.
Three main nerdy kids who are the protagonists in Stranger Things. They are into Dungeons and Dragons. They are into comic books.
Okay.
They are talking about X-Men, I believe. And this takes place in the early 80s. This is a period piece, right? I don't think that... Maybe I've gotten to this on this show, but I don't think so. Here's my anger, and we went into it in depth last week on our comic book casualties of good actors who have been claimed. It's that in Stranger Things, and that's where I love that mouth breathers, and I forgot all about it, and I've been bringing it back. Actually, I've been using mouth breathers on and off of this your program for a while, but I really like to see it on Stranger Things. Those three kids were outliers. They were nerds, and they were persecuted for it, and they essentially had no friends other than each other, right?
Okay.
They were obviously outcasts in school. They didn't spend a lot of time in that program showing their school life, them getting picked on, but it was alluded to, and... Now, flash forward 30 years, Brian, and all these comic book movies are getting turned into movies, and all these people going to see them are saying, oh, yeah, I've been waiting my whole life for these movies, and they're making buku bucks at the box office, and they're hordes, many of which are mouth breathers, are going to see them, and everyone's claiming, oh, yeah, I've been waiting for these my whole life because I'm a giant comic book nerd. Where were you guys in the early 80s when these three kids from Stranger Things... Those type of kids were getting picked on for being those guys.
These kids are always portrayed as loners. You know
what I
mean? Like there's no one else.
They're the outliers. There's very, very few of them, right?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but I think this is a movie trope that doesn't really exist anymore. I don't think these cliques exist in school anymore. At least they didn't when I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people that are claiming to be the nerds, as big of a nerds as the kids in Stranger Things, I think they weren't really nerds. They may have been into those type of pop culture things, but
did we have this exact conversation on the show already?
Have.
Okay. So my main point here then.
Did I say that I think I feel like the internet was sort of the great equalizer of all this, because now it could bring the nerds together, whereas they may have been disparate or felt alone.
So
now that they can commune over.
There are definitely nerds that were social outcasts and very awkward. But I don't think that for the most part these cliques exist anymore.
My point is this. If you're offended by my rage and anger about the comic book movies, which I think it's starting to slow down. You won't have to hear my rage. It'll be whatever the next thing is. I'll find a new target. But when I'm talking about mouth breathers going to see these things, that's what's really hit a chord, a negative chord with a number of our listeners who have sent me emails saying, hey, look, I have been reading these comic books. I have been waiting for these movies to be made for my entire life. I am excited. I am going to see them because I am a true fan. I'm not talking to you guys. I'm talking to the mouth breather sitting next to you who doesn't know shit about it and didn't grow up knowing anything about it. But now they're going, what's the good of the movies? I go see. Okay, I see. Popcorn. Those fuckers.
You're referring to the ones that are claiming to be huge fans of it, but it's only because since the movies came out, they were
the followers,
fans of it.
The groupers,
they never
the people
read the comics
fucking
about it.
Go on, go with the flow, the mob mentality.
Groupers. Groupersofmovie.com.
Fucking. Oh, groupersofmovie.com. Yeah. Also, that leads me to my next thing. I am looking for megaphones, which is what we call them in crowdfunding campaigns. And I have a core of like five or six. My core team right now is five or six. I just hired a campaign.
I have a megaphone.
I hired a campaign manager for my upcoming crowdfunding for my first feature, which is Groupers, which you can give me your email over at groupersthemovie.com if you like. And it looks like I'm going to need about 12 crowdfunding associate producers is the credit that I'm giving to anyone who is willing to help in the trenches on the front line. I'm looking for some people that I don't know yet who would like to learn all about crowdfunding and hiring this crowdfunding manager. I also have access to a bunch of back channels and videos, and he's got like a 98% success rate.
What's his name?
Justin. I'm not going to get into all that yet. Once I'm successful with it, I will give him plugs, but not just yet. But the guy knows a lot.
What is the duty of an associate producer?
The date of when we should launch the campaign. Okay. Associate producer, that's where Megaphone comes in. The main thing that I've learned a ton in the last couple months is we're just going to need to get the word out there. We're going to need to spread the word, make awareness. So you got to be willing to hit up people in your circles and people in their circles. And I'm learning. I'm being trained on not how to not bug people, because that's going to be my least favorite part of this entire thing.
Is
posting too much about something or bugging people. I hate that idea of it, but it's
part and parcel.
But I'm learning. I mean, and if you have any interest in doing that and helping me with my feature and learning about the whole crowdfunding science that goes behind it, because I know it's been around for a while, and I know a lot of people, myself included, are saying like that's so yesterday and stop it with the crowdfunding, especially when fucks like Corolla and Zach Braff get into it and they're like, hey, I'm a millionaire. Can I have some of your money? Fuck you guys. But and corporations and even studios are like saying, yeah, go out and get crowdfunding money, then come talk to me. Fuck you guys. It's losing its punch for what it should be, which is, people who want to get off little independent stories without going to the man with the jowls. So, if you're interested in that, I'm looking for about five or six associate producers who will get the credit. It will be IMDb credit and all that good stuff. And give me an email at anderson@andersoncowan.com, if you would, and put associate producer in the subject line so I know what I'm looking for.
Anderson@andersoncowan.com.
Cowan, C-O-W-A-N. Thank you, Brian, for confusing everyone further.
No, because people don't know how to spell it, and you spelled it.
But it's going to be really fun. Let's do this. It's all been coming to this. C-O-W-A-N, not to be confused with Brian's fuckheadness over there. So,
well, had I not said that, you would not have thought how to spell it. Mm-hmm.
So it could be fun. And, there'll be weekly emails. And, it is going to probably be like a half hour, maybe as much as 45 minutes a day during the actual campaign, which could be 30 to 45 days. That's coming up. I'm learning stuff as I go here, and it's great.
But if you're social media anyway, if you're into that kind of stuff, this is an easy way to get a cool film credit.
And the catchphrase is megaphones. I need some other megaphones. I am the main megaphone, and I'm going to be blabbing about it everywhere, and I get embarrassed myself and talking about it to all my people in my little circles. But I need some other folk as well. So
folk.
Thank you, guys and girls, whoever would like to be a part of it. I'm excited.
So, Bad Moms was really good. Coming up next.
Have I said that Groupers is pretty much just Bad Moms Part 2?
Oh, no shit.
No, it's not.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was actually excited for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Mouth breathers. Groupers, you should really feel bad about that.
In watching Fat Kid Rules the World, mine's not going to be quite as sweet, but it's kind of a similar tone where it's like,
oh, no.
It's a sweet movie, but there's a lot of hard-edged shit there. Okay. A lot of memorable, not disturbing, but it's not made for kids, but it's about kids, and it gets pretty real. And it gets pretty over the top. And my movie is going to be memorable, if anything. It's going to be fucking memorable. And if I shouldn't even say this, but if I had to guess, it would probably be like 54% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's what you're aiming for.
That's fine. Just a little
split
over
down the middle.
A little over half of the critics get it.
If you had exactly 50, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Right down the middle, split them.
I think 66 is pretty strong for
Lemieux.
Rotten Tomatoes.
Lemieux?
No, just like 2 out of 3.
Oh.
2 out of 3, that's good.
Okay.
You know, my favorite movies are a bit polarizing.
Yeah.
You know?
You got to beware of the ones that are, 95%. Those are pretty good.
Speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, it's really easy to get caught up on the number and just totally avoid movies. And I've been guilty of it. Hey, if I just trusted RT, I would have never seen Chappie.
Bad Moms. Oh.
Chappie was where I was going to go.
Okay. Sorry.
That was top 10 last year, Brad.
You like Chappie?
Love Chappie.
New crimes? Coming up next.
Heist's crimes?
Hey, Chappie could be a pet. In a
he
way.
He could kind of be a pet.
Yeah.
We'll go over
safe,
that
safe,
when we come
safe.
Back.
Next week. All the textbooks are coming fast and furious.
Oh, you love the textbooks.
I do. Someone bought Algorithm Design for $150.
Ooh.
Fundamentals of Corporate Finance, Harmony and Context. That's a book for music majors, Anderson. Mm-hmm. People studying music. You gotta study harmony, apparently. It's funny you asked me, like, why does this amuse you so much? I think it's the racket of it all. I think it's that we're all
It absolutely is.
It's such a racket.
I hate a lot of these textbooks because I've, as being a reader of them over the years, mm-hmm. I was in school, as were you. You learn that about 10% of the book actually matters. The rest is like fluff.
And
just to fill it out.
There's always a later edition because they don't want you buying the old one.
To justify the price.
That's right.
You know, in film school, I think I told you this, they actually had a full 2.5, maybe full 3 pages explaining that if you see like a close-up on a person and you only see half of their face, the other half actually exists off the frame.
It's actually there, yeah.
They spent 2.5 pages explaining that, Brian. They spent time.
Physics for Scientists and Engineers, A Strategic Approach, Volume 1. That's 4th edition. Mm. And someone bought Using MIS, that is Management Information Systems, I believe, 8th edition. That is a $223 book. Savvy person bought it for $50 used. $50 used, as our listeners. Very savvy. Good job on you. And other things purchased on the Amazon banner on AndersonandBrian.com include someone got a Baby Fanatic pacifier with clip, branded from University of Georgia, UGA. You know what their mascot's name is?
Fret.
Ugga.
Ugga?
Like UGA?
Let's move on.
It's sort of a play on UGA. Right. It's a bulldog.
All right, college boy. All
someone
right,
got a Wubbanub brown monkey pacifier. Yeah, something you said that always stuck with me. Why do they name these things so ridiculously? It's the parents that are buying them.
I said that last week. I don't think Wubbanub. I said that.
Wubbanub. Jawbone big jam box wireless Bluetooth.
Jam that purchase. Box. Jam it.
A Tribe Called Quest t-shirt. A hello. Is it me you're looking for? Lionel Richie
don't
t-shirt.
Do that. Don't
and
sing
a
that.
9 Inch Nails t-shirt.
Ooh, two very purchased. Different musical acts.
Here's a good one. I should get this for you. Someone got a Quince Shark Fishing Amity Island t-shirt.
I was hoping it was going to be like How to Make Friends book.
No, it's Quince Shark Fishing.
Okay, please not shark fishing. Please don't fish
Quint,
the sharks.
Quint. Apple Airport Extreme was purchased. A Audio Technica Direct Drive DJ
even if you're
turntable.
Eaten whole by a shark. Don't. Don't
fish. Even if a personal vendetta
yes,
against a
please
shark.
Don't.
A bed restraint system, black, with eye mask, adjustable mattress, bondage restraints with cuffs for ankles and wrists. I have to assume that's some sort of BDSM device contraption.
They're just trying, yeah. Or they're trying to sleep.
Or they have night fits.
Yeah.
They're trying to get a good night's sleep. The Fast and the Furious movie poster, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade movie poster, and a Kill Bill movie poster were all purchased. A lawnmower was purchased. A Remington 51 cubic centimeters, 2-cycle, 18-inch gas chainsaw was purchased. A Vizio 38-inch, 5.1 channel sound bar with wireless subwoofer and satellite speakers.
Bars. And the jam box.
The jam box. Is that a sound bar or that's a wireless Bluetooth speaker?
They both emit sound.
That's right. An aquarium LED light. Someone got a light for their aquarium. Get anything?
I picked that up in the title.
A heavy-duty multi-purpose folding stepladder, aluminum, of course, and a Lego Ninjago Final Flight of Destiny's bounty building kit was purchased. No post this week.
No what?
No post.
No post? Oh, you're not hitting a post.
Yeah. Or am I? Post.
Here are
post,
the villains post, or eclectors. Post. Since the last time I saw you. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Classic. Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
That scene polarizing.
I've never seen that.
You've never seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance.
You said Singing in the Rain. It's Randolph's Falling on My Head.
Yeah, same thing.
No, it's not. Singing in the Rain is a film that I've not seen.
Well, you're going to see that because it's very good. Yes, very good.
Okay.
Surprisingly really good. It's one of those movies that's really like homework, and then you watch it, you're like, this is delightful.
I'm totally fine.
You're going to watch it.
It was one of the movies I had to watch for homework, and I ended up really liking it.
Good. It is one of those weird movies where it's like, I can't believe that I'm enjoying this, but I am. Shame.
I did see Butch Cassidy in Sundance, and I like it very much.
Gods of Egypt was clicked through, as well as Keanu, Sicario, The Nice Guys, American Hustle, Batman vs. Superman, Color of Justice, Color of Night, Constantine, Deep Rising, Eddie and the Eagle, Gangs of New York, Gravity, Mad Max, Fury Road, Pacific Rim, Star Wars Trilogy.
Feels like it really rushed through a lot of those.
Titanic and Warrior.
Warrior's a good movie.
Warrior.
Yeah. Joel Edgerton.
And more importantly, Tom Hardy.
Sure,
so Tom mysterious. Hardy. Yes. So silent and mysterious. Walt Disney live action sport film. So there's that.
That was a Disney movie? No kidding.
Believe so.
It didn't feel quite so soft as a Disney film. It may have been.
I believe it was a Disney film.
I'm not saying it's not.
I think it is.
We'll come back and tell you next. Oh, hi there. This is Bill Simmons. Sunny day here in Southern California. And you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. Welcome back.
Corrections, retractions.
Already.
Warrior is not a Disney film. It feels Disney, though. It's Lion King.
It felt a little hard to read, especially with the Nick Nolte storyline. That was a little bit, a little too hard-edged for Disney.
Mm-hmm. PG-13.
In Disney World, drugs don't exist.
It's true.
It's true.
Unless it's happiness.
The ultimate drug.
Joy.
The ultimate drug.
Yes.
Romance.
All right, let's do this.
Top 5 pets.
Yes.
So you have any? I have one clever pick, but the rest are pretty. You're not going to be a lot of hard convincing that they're pets.
Okay. I kind of went over my criteria in the beginning of the show, but it's pets that had a memorable impact within the story.
I'm with you.
Yeah. I wasn't just going with like, oh, even though one of my very first picks is just like, it's funny. Doesn't really play that much of a role. All right, go ahead.
Some of mine I'd like to have as pets. Some of mine I would very much not like to have as pets. And let's just start at number 5.
Do it.
Precious.
Nah.
Precious.
Well, okay, this doesn't really go with my criteria.
Precious. From Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill's little pet dog, Precious.
I hate that kind of dog, too. Little poodle.
I know, little yip-yip dog.
Yeah.
I don't like that dog either, but it plays a very important
role. It does play a pretty important role.
It's so incongruous.
Role. Yeah.
Buffalo Bill, the maniac killer, and this little dog, Precious. Its name is Precious.
Is she a little white dog? Is she a little white dog?
Don't you hurt my dog.
Don't you hurt my fucking dog.
You don't know what pain is.
Precious.
She got Precious with the chicken bone.
She's in a lot of pain, mister. She's in a lot of pain.
Actually, Precious was yelping.
You know what I think about?
She was
yeah, that's right.
She was hurting Precious.
I think she broke her leg. And he goes to get his gun. He's going to finish her off.
It really shows the bipolarity of Buffalo Bill, how he's able to be so soft.
Yeah. He probably cared for that dog.
I'm sure he did.
He probably cared very
Can you imagine the things that dog saw?
Oh.
It's funny because we think of dogs as so precious and beautiful little pets and like, you know, they do no harm. Mm-hmm. And I got my Stanley, you got your Charlie.
Yep.
But like if we were Buffalo Bill and we were just like if we decided let's kill Logan now.
And our dogs would love us.
And they wouldn't care at all.
No.
If we killed Logan, brought him back to your place and like hacked him up, Charlie would just be wandering around the bits and pieces of Logan, wagging his tail, enjoying himself.
I feel like I hear what you're saying, man.
It's sad.
I feel like I hear what you're saying.
I don't know why we didn't.
We'll talk off the air. Hey, here's the thing about Precious. Think about this, Anderson. If you existed in the universe of Silence of the Lambs, you could probably adopt Precious because once the FBI came in and like cleaned up Buffalo Bill's like lair, like got rid of the sewing machine and the night vision goggles and the sewing machine, all that. The dog's out of ghost, so he's got to liquidate his assets, and they're not going to kill the dog. Dog didn't do anything.
I assume the victim took it home.
Oh, you think the girl at the bottom
bad
of the
memories.
Well?
Yeah, she bad liked memory. It. I don't know about that. Every time the dog licks you, you're thinking, what else have you licked?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I'm to the point where, you know, I love my animals.
I couldn't remember her name.
I know, but the idea that like, all right, lady, I know you've been through a lot. Why don't you grab that dog?
It's compensation.
Compensation. reparations.
The wife loves to watch murder porn, right?
Sure.
48 hours later, next 48 hours, all that shit. And Lester Holt, whenever what's his fuck's on there, she's watching. And a lot of times they'll show these pictures of these horrible like pederasts and like, you know, child killers and
wearing the skin of his victims.
Yeah.
And I go, they'll show the picture of like the family picture with, or just a picture of the guy. And every time there's a dog involved, I feel so bad for the dog. I'm like, what happened? All right, I know the guy fried. I know that, like, you know, this one got sentenced for life. But what happened to that
Where's
little
the dog?
The
right
poor
now?
Dog. The dog looks so happy and unknowing in that picture. It kills me. It kills me, Bri. Speaking of pets.
Yep.
Number five for me.
Speaking of pets.
5A.
On the subject.
I got a 5A and a 5B because my 5A, while I love it, and it's actually, this doesn't say much for me, but it was the first one that popped into the mind.
The first one.
Before I walked out of here last week. It's not an animal in the sense that we think of animals, even though human beings are animals.
Oh, no.
We forget about that a lot of the time.
Please don't say the gimp.
No, not the gimp. Talking about rabbit. Rabbit.
This is all salt and sea.
Iman Farron from Chained playing Rabbit. And he is Vincent D'Onofrio's pet, essentially. Vincent D'Onofrio is a horrible serial killer in this movie,
not
Chained. No, Chained. Okay, directed by David Lynch.
D'Onofrio Projects.
Directed by David Lynch's daughter, Jennifer Chambers Lynch. And this is a great movie. And I say that with a grain of salt because it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I truly enjoyed, in particular, Vincent D'Onofrio's character. And the story goes like this, Bri. He kills people, women, and you know, has his way with them, and then he discards them. And he made a mistake and picked up a woman who had a kid. I believe the kid was in the car. Somehow the kid came with the woman. And he's like, he's got principles. He doesn't kill kids. He just kills the ladies.
Yeah, he's not a maniac.
So he's like, I don't know what to do with you. And he kind of talks like this. You know, it's Vincent D'Onofrio. And he's like, I will call you Rabbit. And he keeps him on a chain, and Rabbit has chores that he does, and he has to clean around the house, sure. But he has this chain that goes about 20 feet or so, and you know, enough to let him go about his business around the house, but he is a pet for all intents and purposes, Brad.
You know, I suppose the human centipede could be considered a pet then, too.
Oh, that's definitely a pet.
Yeah.
Three dog.
Three dog.
Three dog's a pet. He's not on my list.
Three dog's only seen in archival footage and photograph.
Just to bring up the rear, though, and to give you an actual
speaking of bringing up the rear,
traditional pet, Bri, I'm going with Basil. Where's my snake?
I don't know who this is.
A Clockwork Orange, 1971.
Oh, that's right.
Malcolm McDowell's character, Little Alex, has a pet snake. And the pet snake
is a pretty minor part of the movie.
Does some inappropriate things while Alex slushies, as he says. And we get to see all the horrific imagery going on inside Little Alex's mind as he beats off. Brian, I think Malcolm McDowell was well into his 20s. He was old when he made Clockwork Orange. He was playing a 15-year-old.
Yeah, that's weird. What's weird is I never caught on that he was supposed to be 15 until many years later. And I did research on the movie, probably for the show.
Let it go.
Was he supposed to be 15?
It was actually supposed to be Ian Holmes to begin with, but it took so long to get the production off the ground that he was too old by that time, and they went with Malcolm McDowell.
Very different movie.
It would have been a much different movie. Malcolm McDowell killed it as Alex. It's my favorite film of all time. But you know, we see the snake in the beginning, and while he's having his fantasy and. The snake is doing this great thing where it's like on the stick and it's actually going, if you recall, he essentially had a fat head. Little Alex had a fat head back in the early 1971 when this movie came out, probably 1970 when they shot it. It was a painting of a woman spreading her legs and showing her innards, essentially. And they got a shot, Kubrick got a shot of the snake actually going off the little tree stick and kind of trying to penetrate the two-dimensional image on the wall. Beautiful.
Quite
probably happy accident. Visionary. But it was Kubrick, so maybe they sat there for 20 hours trying to get
trying
it.
To
Who
get
knows?
That one shot.
Here's another little interesting tidbit about Alex's pet snake, Basil. It was not in the actual Nabokov Anthony Burgess book. Nabokov did Lolita. It was not in the Anthony Burgess book. In fact, Kubrick brought it in and brought it to the production after learning of Malcolm McDowell's giant phobia of reptiles. Mm. And that's what made him decide.
Hey, it would be a good idea.
Let's get him a boa.
The star of the film hates these things.
So number 5B is Little Alex's pet snake Basil, which is a boa constrictor, which he cruelly keeps in his nightstand. Just in the drawer. He opens up the drawer and lets Basil out at night when he comes home and enjoys the spoils of war. Yeah. Remember that scene where he opens the one nightstand and it's just filled with loot and cash and watches, and then he opens up the other one and lets Basil out. Maybe not in that order.
Kind of. I have to go. I remember it being a really small part of the movie, but I do remember it being.
And then he comes home from jail. God,
yeah.
Anyone who's not seen this, guys, you got to see it. First of all, it's a perfect symmetrical movie. So every time you see him one place, he's going to end up in that place again. Other than the second act, which is prison, which is, you know, he's just in prison. But he goes back home.
Does he go back to the milk bar?
He goes back every. He's in the milk bar a couple times.
Okay.
But he goes back home and there's a new man in his place sitting.
A new son,
essentially. And he has that infamous line of, it's infamous to me. And he was, where's Basil? And they're like, who's in? Where's my snake? And his dad goes, well, you had a bit of an accident, son. What happened to Basil? We'll never know.
He'll never know. Mm-hmm. Number four for me. You made me watch a film last week. Remember what it was? You assigned me a film?
Yeah, did you not flick facet?
How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, yeah. The one that I... Oh, yeah, we both got assigned a film. Okay, yes.
You assigned me... Sorry, last episode, yes, I was assigned a film.
Right.
It was How to Train Your Dragon.
You're going with Toothless, huh?
No, I'm
you
not.
Just saw it.
No, I'm not.
Okay,
no, I'm not.
All right.
The writer and director, Dean Dubois and Chris Sanders, the writer-director team, they did a film before that we have never talked about on the show. I can't remember ever coming up.
Kubo and the Two Strings.
Lilo and Stitch.
Oh yeah, I got
Stitch.
Got Stitch there on my also ran.
Stitch is a pretty
Stitch
sweet
pet. Stitch is solid.
Stitch, aka Experiment 626. He's an alien. Well, I don't even know if it's a he. Stitch is an alien. He's a six-legged alien who crash lands on the planet Earth on the island of Kauai, and is mistaken for a mutant dog. Anderson. I'm just gonna say he because who knows. He has the ability to retract his limbs. Remember, he retracts two of his limbs into his body.
I only
so
saw
he can
this
pass
once.
For a dog. Really? I only saw it once too.
And it was very good. It was one of the first, I think, non-CGI cartoons. Mm-hmm. One of the last ones that I actually saw that I really remember enjoying. It's just like watercolor. It's like cells and watercolor. It's not the actual CGI
it's
that
traditional
we 3D
animation.
CGI that we've come to expect these mm-hmm. days. But yeah, I remember Stitch being pretty cool. Not enough that I would want to get like a Stitch little toy to like hang in my car or anything like that. Every now and again, I'll see a movie.
Disney had higher hopes for Stitch toys.
Yeah,
than it actually happened.
He wasn't cute enough that I wanted like Elliot. Like I want Elliot.
Yeah.
From Pete's Dragon. I don't want a Stitch.
You know I'd rather have a Baymax.
Baymax, yeah, he'd be cuddly.
More than Stitch.
Yeah.
Stitch, though, I liked very much. I went back and watched a bunch of clips of Stitch because I hadn't seen the movie since probably 2003. And yes, Stitch, he was originally created, Anderson, to wreak untold havoc on the galaxy. He was a weapon. He was like an intergalactic weapon. And he through love, Anderson, with his master, Lilo Pelakai, he turns into a near-domesticated loving pet. Stitch is pretty cute.
I bring you peace and love.
Mr. Burns?
Yeah.
Radiated.
Good call.
Radiated.
Yes. The X-Files.
I bring you love.
Get him.
Get him. He's in love. Get him.
That's good. We've been enjoying our Simpsons flashbacks here in the old film.
Why don't we start doing our trivia again?
Ooh, Santa's Little Helper. Ooh. It's a pet in a movie.
You're right.
All right. Number four for me.
Snowball.
Number four for me. 2007. It's a bit of a cheat, but I wept openly, Brian, in the theaters when I watched Sam. Oh, I got to be careful.
Oh,
I'm not everyone's seen the old Omega Man remake. I Am Legend. I'm talking about I Am Legend 2007. It's the first movie where I'm with Will Smith, where I'm like, you know what? The guy can do more than comedy. He can act his balls off, and he's doing it with nothing but a dog here.
Bit of an underrated movie.
And
we've talked about this
before. It was definitely an underrated movie. And Sam the dog, German Shepherd, given to him in the story
dog.
By
I
his
love
daughter.
German Shepherds.
And the storyline, I think most of you know it. It's like another one of these a zombie post-apocalyptic dystopian futures. It takes place in between 2009 and 2011. Isn't that funny?
It's a few years in the future.
Yeah, not too distant future. Yeah. And the whole world is infected and or dead. And it's just...
From a virus.
It's just Will Smith, the man, and his dog, Sam. And they're just kind of wandering in the streets and coming across, what are they called, night... seekers or something like that.
They can't exist in the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a simple premise. It's the last man on Earth. It's actually on TVTropes.org. It's a trope in and of itself, the last man and his dog, because that's actually a trope.
The man's best friend.
Yeah, the last man on Earth
and his dog.
Other than
duct tape. Am I right? Duct tape.
I don't get it.
A lot of people say that duct tape is man's
best
friend.
Oh, yeah, duct tape, WD-40, and mm-hmm. you can fix anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I can't give anything away, and if you're listening... even with half an ear and you haven't heard this, I'm sorry, because you probably figured out what I'm talking about. But you don't realize how much you love this pet until... It's like you don't know what you love till it's gone, Brian.
Yeah,
Brian.
It's true.
And Sam really, really hit the nail on the head with her performance.
Loyal till the end. Loyal till
Will
the end.
Will fell in love with the dog to the extent that he asked if he could adopt it. And the trainer, who you have to imagine probably had a bunch of dogs...
You train a dog for a lifetime to get to become a working, acting dog.
Professional dog trainer. He wouldn't part ways, no matter what. He couldn't put a price on him. He said, no, you cannot have this dog.
It's my moneymaker.
I think it was the exact same dog, too, that was in Paranormal Activity.
Oh, really?
At least I'd read that some at some point. It might be true. I don't know. Go ahead, Brian.
Coming up next,
ooh,
we will continue with the list after this break.
Brian, I said this last week.
What did you say?
I have a favorite. I have a favorite sponsor, and that is
Blue Apron. Well, don't let the other sponsors hear you say that.
They might not. I don't know. Okay. But Blue Apron is my favorite sponsor, just because I spend so much time with Blue Apron every single week.
Well, what about your mattress? Never mind. Don't say that.
That's true. I spend a lot of time on my mattress, but not one-on-one time.
Yeah, I'm in bed with it's a three hours.
I am by myself cooking, having me time in the kitchen with Blue Apron, just me and my ingredients and my box. And I every single time I finish a Blue Apron meal, preparing it, cooking it, eating it, I am a more accomplished cook in the kitchen. I love it.
It's like a training session.
It's a little training session.
So you get to eat.
And I never throw ingredients away unless it's cilantro.
Ooh, yeah, I don't like cilantro either.
It's the only thing away I throw away.
Cilantro's not good for us gringos.
Well, it tastes like soap.
It does.
Does it taste like soap to you?
It does.
That's like 10% of the population.
I know. It's some small percent.
It's an enzyme.
No, this is our...
We could be
connected in the lobster. This is our connection. Mm-hmm. Like for the lobster.
I don't like having connections
with you. We get a romantic connection.
I do like Blue Apron, though, a lot.
I do, too. We had... Christy and I made the beef quesadilla last night. My God, it was good. And it was easy. Some are more elaborate than others. This one was remarkably easy.
But I'm sure that it was fancy. I'm sure it was fancier than just like making yourself a quesadilla. They always have their own little twist.
That's funny you always learn something. Because Christy said out loud, she's like, I forgot how much I like quesadillas. I'm like, you know why? Because it's usually just melted cheese inside of a tortilla. Now, this was the ground beef with the seasoning and the sides and the actual like good cheese. Like this wasn't, you know, cheddar cheese grated beneath two pieces of a tortilla. Oh, no. Always good stuff.
And it's cost effective because you don't, like I said, you don't throw anything away and you get exactly the ingredients you need. And it saves you trips to the supermarket. When I'm doing Blue Apron, I'm not going to the market, which is fantastic.
That is the best part.
So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free.
Three meals
that's
free.
That's a box with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TFV.
Blueapron.com/TFV.
Oh, and look who's back, Brian.
Who's back?
DraftKings.
Yes, indeed.
DraftKings. I know you love your DraftKings.
You know I love my DraftKings. I actually, you know what's funny? Aside from the mattresses we both sleep on individually, not with each other, I say DraftKings is one of the sponsors I spend the most time with.
I bet.
During the football season.
You love it.
I really do. It's a
just
lot of
like
fun.
Fantasy. I'm sure most of you know, but it's just like fantasy sports, except there's actual rewards at the end.
Yeah, and you're playing for a day or a weekend or a week if you want to, but it's a weekly/daily fantasy, and if you like fantasy football, or any fantasy sport for that matter. Of course, they have baseball and golf and MMA. They have everything. If you guys are into that kind of stuff, DraftKings is where you want to go. Send me a challenge, by the way. Bald Brian is my username. Yours is Brian Rules.
Go to DraftKings.com. No, it's Brian Sucks. DraftKings.com now to choose your players, and you could seriously cash in week one.
Yeah.
Use code TFV and play for free with your first deposit.
That's code TFV.
Play for free. For your share of the $5 million in total prizes, this week, one contest.
Only DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details.
DraftKings.com. And there it is. Speaking of Casper, Brian.
Speaking of all the time spent.
Yes.
We have logged hundreds of hours on Casper's.
The best thing about Casper, other than its quality and how it is just a very comfortable mattress for myself, my pregnant wife, Brian and his pregnant
wife.
That's
a good point.
Not all four at the same time, as we already stipulated. But the best thing about the Casper is if you don't trust us, zero risk. You hear it all the time, but it's really zero risk. You click on, you figure out what mattress you want. They ship it to your house. You put it on your bed. You have 100 days to try it out. If you don't like it, they come at any time. They come. They haul it away.
100 days is a long time. Like that is, I'm 3+ months into this mattress and I'm really not feeling it. They'll come get it.
But why would you spend 3 months? You're not going to. You're going to spend, you know, at least the next number of years on it because you're going to love it. And it's very cost effective. And it's even more cost effective when you can get $50 towards any mattress by just going to casper.com/TFV and using the TFV promo code.
Casper.com/TFV. We use it. We like it. Casper.com/TFV. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Bam, 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 bam.
So far, I've had three picks because I've had 2 at 5, which was Rabbit from Chained, who was a human being. Rabbit. Also, Alex's pet snake, Basil, from A Clockwork Orange, and which is kind of a cheat. I understand that. They're getting stronger as we go. That's the name of the game, guys. We go 5-1 for a reason. I also had my number four slot, Sam, from I Am Legend, the beautiful German Shepherd that keeps my dream alive, Brian, of wanting to own a German Shepherd.
I want to own a German Shepherd, too. They're wonderful. Have bad joints. Better a Siberian Husky.
They have bad joints, and they scare certain populations around the world.
But they're beautiful dogs.
I think it was Rumble in the Jungle where George showed up. George Foreman showed up, and he had a German Shepherd pet, and like he got off a plane, and everyone, like the entire country, was like terrified of German Shepherds because they've been terrorized by them by a regime. So they immediately hated George Foreman.
I didn't realize that. I totally forgot.
German Shepherds strike fear in certain people.
Yeah, they are. They can be trained to be aggressive dogs. Mm. Number three for me is speaking of dogs, very funny part of a very funny movie.
Oh, Baxter.
No. These are the Yorkies from A Fish Called Wanda.
Mm.
Remember the old lady and the dogs?
Yes, I do.
A Fish Called Wanda?
Yes.
So the dogs themselves are neither here nor there, but they lead to a very funny recurring joke. This is a movie directed by Charles Crichton, his final film. Fish Called Wanda from 1988 features... three people committed crimes. They commit a heist. They rob a bank, and the only person who may have witnessed their crime is an old lady who lives close by, and she was walking her dog. So they say... Ken. Ken. Ken is a dim-witted, gentle animal lover. They task him with taking out the old lady. She's the only witness. Take her out.
Right.
And Ken devises these elaborate scenarios in which he's attempting to kill the old lady when he sees her on the street. And every time he sees her, she's coming out of her her apartment complex walking these three little Yorkies, little yip-yip dogs. And he's trying to kill the old lady, but he's so inept, he's killing the dogs one by one.
Right.
And Ken is a dimwit and a gentle animal lover. Like
yes.
He is a sweet little man who's caught up in this heist, and he's killing these dogs more and more elaborately to his horror. He's like horrified every time it happens, but he's so inept.
This is awful.
If you want to, it's a fun movie. You should watch this. But if you want to just go on YouTube and just search Fish Called Wanda, Ken and the Dogs, that will show all the scenes in which Ken is trying to kill the dogs. Trying to kill the old ladies and accidentally kills the dogs. Very funny stuff. Very funny stuff.
Number three, Death of Dogs is never funny, Barbara.
Each one more alive. They play it for laughs.
They don't really do that trope much anymore. Like, we got to take out the old lady, or we got to take out this innocent bystander because he knows too much. And like now we're going to be tasked with finding this person and killing
him. That is a bygone trope.
Kind of like big in the 80s and 90s. Doesn't happen. It still happens, but not nearly as often. Mm. Number three for me. This comes from George A. Romero's first and possibly only or one of his only studio picks he ever made, 1988. It's a film that came up not too long ago, a number of weeks ago, though, on a list. A little movie called Monkey Shines, Brian. Monkey Shines is forever seared in my brain. I will never forget Monkey Shines because it is disturbing and unique in the sense that it's a movie about a quadriplegic man. That's all four appendages are paralyzed.
Or afflicted.
And it's also the only movie to date that shows the sexual act with a... quadriplegic man.
Okay.
He is a man who named Alan, and he is gifted a pet monkey that is trained to help him around the house. Her name is Ella. Ella the monkey. Cute little monkey, Brian. It's like a little Reese monkey, I believe.
Reese's monkey.
Cute little monkey.
Yeah.
Ella. And the problem is Ella, well, she's a vindictive bitch. She's very jealous.
Ella carries a grudge.
And Ella... during the movie, goes on a bit of a murderous rampage, but it's done a bit over the top, but it's not done schlocky or B horror movie style. It's done in a dramatic fashion and grounded in reality enough that you could believe it. And what happens by the end of the movie, you will never, ever shake. You will always remember. It's awful, disturbing, and sad.
Oh.
But well, Ella's a victim.
Doesn't sound fun.
Ella's a victim, and she kind of gets what she's got coming.
Okay, because Ella, like you said, is a bitch.
But she's great as a pet, as Alan's pet, as the quadriplegic man's pet.
And this
Monkey
is
Shines.
From the mid-'80s, early-'80s?
1988.
Okay, so.
Monkey Shines.
Obviously, there was no CGI, or they didn't get the monkey manipulated anyway, right?
Oh, the monkey was manipulated, but not by CGI.
The monkey was manipulated.
Monkey got manipulated. Monkey Shines. It's a movie that doesn't get talked about enough, especially because of...
I heard it was bad.
I want to call it bad.
But it's definitely unique, and you've never seen anything like it before. Monkey Shines. Hey, Logs, when you get a second, can you tell me, that's a one piece that I didn't get to for this today's program, where Monkey Shines came up on most recently. Can you type that into our...
I feel like how did this get made? Did it for an episode? And they only do bad movies, although movies that maybe are a little off or a little wacky.
I don't know, dude. Okay. I don't listen to other shows, bro.
Animal Attacks.
Yes. Makes sense, because I said... Ella's a murderer. And to murder, you must attack.
That's a good point. It's hard to well, unless you're Ken from A Fish Called Wanda.
I got two left.
Okay.
Kind of three.
As do I.
Kind of three.
I have only two.
Go.
Number two for me. Adorable. I think I may have had a Gizmo doll when I was younger. Oh. Gizmo.
Yeah, Gizmo should have.
My only obvious choice, I think, on the list.
Number one.
Gizmo from the Gremlins, 1984. It was just Gremlins, actually. 1984. Joe Dante, written by Chris Columbus. Yes, a plush doll that I had as a five-year-old, Anderson.
I could see that. Yeah. Never mind.
According to Gremlins Wiki, it's a real thing, he's an eternal, quote-unquote, which is a subset of Mogwai that is purely good. He has no evil in him, which is weird because he spawns evil characters.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And they get him wet.
Well, I'm sure there's like some very good people out there that have horrible children. Like, your dad's pretty good.
Wow.
Your dad's a good man.
I did not see that going that way. I was going to go the other way with you and little Atticus.
Uh-huh.
He's probably going to be a sweet kid.
Yeah, could be.
Until you ruin him.
Skips a generation. Wait, it doesn't skip a generation because look at my dad. All right, go ahead. Keep going.
That's it. Gizmo, probably an obvious choice. Probably on the listener's list. You consider him a pet, right? Mr. Peltzer buys him.
He's for sure a pet. Yeah,
buys him. Mr. Bing.
Him at a pet store. No, he doesn't.
He wasn't in like an oddity store, right?
A bizarre store, yes.
And he's not for sale. I shouldn't do the accent, but he's not for sale.
Don't do the accent, bro.
Well, I do it. I'm not. Like,
I'll do it
like,
for you. It was like, yo, brother, he's not for sale, motherfucker.
He's not for sale, mate.
Number two for me.
We're both pretty close.
Number two for me is two movies because they're both the same movie, but one was remade and one has 154,000 or so ratings on IMDb, while the other one only has 4,000. The original only has like 4,000 or 5,000. Well, that's because it's a Japanese film. I'm talking about Hachiko, 1987, as opposed to Hachi: A Dog's Tale. Both have been seen by me. Both effective. Both equally effective.
You like this movie?
Both make me sob. Richard Gere is in Hachi: A Dog's Tale. Highly rated, Brian. I think it's in the 80s on the old Rotten Tomatoes.
I have the sense that something bad happens to the dog, and as such, I will never see it.
Hachi is an Akita dog, and is portrayed by three separate Akitas in Hachi: A Dog's Tale, 2009.
Another beautiful dog.
Far less information about the production of Hachiko, which is the Japanese original version. This is a real-life story about a real-life dog set in the present day for the sake of budget restraints, I'm sure, and why make a period piece if you don't have to, if it's just about the spirit of a dog. But the dog, the real-life Hachi, lived from 1923 to 1935. And at the time, this is super interesting, because we've really gotten to like, you know, crazy dog shit over the last 80, 90, 100 years. Okay. Like before, there was only like four or five different types of dogs.
Yeah, many different
breeds. We've been breeding
now.
Them like fucking maniacs and making all these different breeds. At the time of Hachi's actual existence, from 23 to 35, there was only 30 living Akitas in Japan. Only 30. Really? And this one,
he was a celebrity,
was super famous because not only was he one of 30 living Japanese Akitas at the time, but the story, I think it's a fairly well-known story, is he had an owner, which he's very loyal to, as dogs are known to be, and he'd go with his owner to the train station every single day, and his owner would get on the train, go to work, and then come back, and Hachi would be there waiting for his owner, and something bad happened to the owner, and the owner never came back on that train, and Hachi the real-life dog, waited for 9 fucking years.
That's terrible.
So brutal, Brian. But God, do you love that dog. They have a real-life... They have a statue of the real life Hachi at the train station. I would like to actually see that one day in Japan.
Yeah.
I believe a listener of the After Disaster took a picture of himself, a selfie with that statue in Japan wearing the After Disaster shirt, which I appreciated.
You want to do a Japanese live show?
We should do that. We should go over there. Oh, I would love that. After Disaster. I mean, phone ball. I got scared because I was about to do the accent. But Hachi. Oh, shit. Either one. Take your pick. Good movie. I mean, I know it's easy to look at the poster and go, oh, shit, Richard Gere and a fucking dog. No, thank you. But I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you, a good movie.
Mm.
If you can take it.
I don't think I can. I've stayed away from Marley and Me all these years. I can't.
Last time this one came up was on top five saddest movies, I think.
So what the fuck would I want to see that?
And then if you read about the real life Hachi, it just gets worse. Oh, you learn that like he had like when they did an autopsy. Why the fuck were they autopsying that dog? I don't know.
Yeah, what
did
they have to find out?
They found like chopsticks and like meat skewers.
That's
like
racist, Anderson.
They found like wooden skewers in his stomach. Ah, why am I bringing this to a listener? I'm sorry, guys. But Hachi, he's a great pet. What a fucking loyal dog. I love that Hachi. Mm. Makes me want to get an Akita, too. I want to have an Akita and a German Shepherd on either flank. Yeah.
As your protectors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're taking a break for a while.
Yeah, taking a break. One more quick break, you guys.
Yeah,
come back
they stacked the ads on us this week by mistake.
Coming up number one next.
So, Brian.
Yeah, buddy.
I did a little test.
What'd you do?
I didn't shave for about 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Okay.
I don't grow a ton, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, you got like a constant sort of stubble.
Yeah, and it's kind of like blondish, too. So, yeah, but I went 3 weeks as a test so that I could try out a new sponsor, Harry's.
Oh, what'd you think?
Before I bit. And beautiful.
They're pretty good, right?
Yeah, really good. Really nice, clean shave. And all the little products that it comes with.
It sent quite the elaborate little welcome pack, right? They sent the Harry starter set called the Truman.
They even had base in there. I put some on by mistake. I'm like, well, I got base on my face. Yeah.
What's base?
Like foundation.
Oh, yeah.
It's sunscreen, but it's actually browned. So you look like it's probably for the ladies more than for me. But I had base on my face all day one day.
Feeling a blemish.
It reminded me of my my high school days when I used to wear makeup on a regular basis.
Oh, Jesus.
No, but this blade is solid. It's the double blade.
Did you use the little single blade at top, the one that gets under your nose?
I don't think had that one.
Wow.
I didn't see it. I kept looking for
one of mine.
Maybe I'll take a look at yours. Yeah. Orange? It's an orange one?
Yeah. It's a nice and lightweight.
Maybe I didn't see it.
It's up there. Careful, don't touch it. It'll hurt you.
All right, I won't do that.
No, but it's a good razor.
It's a very good razor, and the aftershave that goes on smooth, it goes on nice. It's a nice way so you don't have to think about going to the market. There's nothing worse than being like having a big appointment the next day and you got to shave and you got one razor and it's rusted. It's like, you don't have to think about that anymore.
Yeah. So get the Harry starter set, guys. It is called the Truman. It's a great option for new customers with an amazing deal. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shave cream, 3 of Harry's 5-blade German engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for our listeners.
And Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code FILM. F-I-L-M. F-I-L-M.
Film.
Film.
Go to Harry's right now. Harry's.com, that is, right now. H-A-R-R-Y-S. H-A-R-R-Y-S. Not like Harry's, like, you know, you're a hairy man. Harry's the name. And look for the Truman set. That's Harry's.com.
With promo code FILM.
Help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today.
Ring, Brian. You still having fun with your ring?
I'm literally looking right now. Look at the, I got two motion alerts right there at my front door. Two motion alerts at my front door.
We get product every now and again. A lot of time we'll demand it and say we have to, you know, see this product before we're actually going to talk about it. I suggest that our listeners get it. And no different with Ring, even though it's a bit of a pricier item. It's a high shelf item.
It's the Ring video doorbell.
It's something everyone should have.
It is. It's funny you mention that because we do get brought potential sponsors from time to time. And usually it's like, all right, we'll send over some stuff and we'll see if we like it or if we use it. This is one of the very few where it's like, oh my God, I've always wanted one of those. Yeah. Yes, please, please, by all means, send over something.
And nowadays with us buying so many things through Amazon and it seems like every other day, especially with us, we're having kids and whatnot, people in
That's
school with the books, like you need some kind of added security, especially if you live in an apartment or something. And this, you know, we're talking about how it's a high priced item, but it pays for itself.
That's funny you mentioned that. There's like a neighborhood watch website that I subscribe to for this neighborhood. And like the people, someone posted on there like, hey, there's been someone stealing packages from like some of the neighbors.
It happens all the time.
And it's like,
not going to happen to you.
Thank God I have the Ring video doorbell. I can put the little sticker up, protected by Ring. And
great little features like Brian was talking about, the motion. So you can just tell if somebody's like, you know, in front of your door. And you have a little chime that you can put anywhere in your house if you like, and you can customize that. And you can see the video of who's at your front door.
You can talk back to them from your phone. If you're at work, you can talk back to them like, hey, who's there?
And it's heat sensor too. So like if you're worried about plants blowing in the, I was telling my friend all about it over the weekend because he needs some security and I was selling him on Ring. And I'm like, dude, you just got to get a Ring because he's like, oh, I got plants. I'm like, the plants won't get red because it reads heat.
So yeah, like a human being.
So it's
infrared,
so it's not going to be like, yeah, exactly, a plant or a
truck. Car driving by, yeah. Unless it's super hot in the day. But super hot. I love my Ring. I think the wife, it feels so much more secure having Ring absolutely. On the front door.
How secure do you feel with her in the house? You know what I mean?
Much better. Wife? Much better. Because I'll get a notice. I'm like, someone's at my front door, and I can call the wife. I'm like, someone's at the front door.
So it's a pretty sweet high-end item, guys, like we said. But for a limited time, get $50 off, $50 off the Ring security kit, the Ring of Security.
That's a pretty
kit.
Good chunk percentage, too.
Ring.com.
That high. We're making it sound like it's a, check it out. Go check it out.
Yeah, it's what's one of my favorites for sure. Ring.com/TFE. That's ring.com/TFE for $50 off. Ring.com/TFE.
Peace of mind. Oh, and Brian, what? Speaking of product, we got custom made tracker
devices.
Oh,
we did. I forgot about that. That's pretty sweet.
They made true tracker devices for us that have the Film Vault logo.
That was pretty cool.
Somehow ingrained in there with the color black and red. It's so cool. It's on my keychain. It's just immediate. Like yeah. It just looks like a keychain.
Grassroots little. Advertising.
It's fantastic. I love it. And you know, no one even knows that it's like a tracking device when I have it on my keychain because it's like art.
It's pretty cool. It's like the size of like a quarter, like a 50 cent piece, right? It's like, it's this little coin
size
thing. Yeah,
it's a coin. And we've talked about it here before, but in case we weren't clear, you don't know what we're talking about. Tracker is this new device, this new technology that will keep your phone in your back. You will never lose your phone again. You will never lose your wallet again.
You can attach it whatever you want. You can attach
anything
it to
your, that you lose.
You know where I put it? My luggage.
Your luggage,
my luggage
when you traveled.
I lost my luggage once on a vacation. It ruined the first few days of the vacation. Never lose your luggage again, you guys. Literally know where it is. Like, oh, it's in Omaha. Well, at least I can see that.
Yeah, you can see it on the map. You just pull it up and it'll show you where it is on the map.
Or it's in the other room. You know what I mean? It's like, right. It's across the baggage claim. And just think of the peace of mind, for God's sake, for this little device.
I talked to a guy that works over there at Ring.
Bring your car, for God's sake.
Give him a call. He uses it for his kid's favorite toy because she was constantly losing her toy. And they just put a little tracker device on it. Now they find the toy immediately.
This is the future.
Yeah.
Go to thetracker.com, thetracker.com. 30% off your entire order, guys. 30%, almost a third off your entire order for using promo code TFE. If you go to thetracker.com right now, enter promo code TFE, 30% off. Your entire order at thetracker.com. Welcome back.
Let's do this.
Time for number one, pets.
Yeah.
Pets and gambling.
Pets.
Oh, my favorite. Pets and gambling.
Pets and bets. Things.
Well done, sir. Number one for me, Anderson, is a number two.
What? It's a poop?
It's a number two.
What?
Audrey 2.
What's going on right now?
Audrey 2!
What is that?
From Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, fuck you.
Come on, this is a pet.
Go away.
Why am I going away?
Because I don't like your stupid pet.
Audrey 2 is a plant, but oh, it's so much
it's
more than a plant.
Is what
it's
it is.
It's a meat. How dare you? It's a mean green mother from outer space, Anderson. The song, by the way, nominated for Best Original Song at the Oscars.
Must have been a slow year.
How dare you? 1986, Little Shop of Horrors, directed by Frank Oz and Rick Moranis.
I saw this in the theaters. Excited. Young Andy going, fuck yeah, this is going to be great.
Isn't that funny? I was really excited too. This might be my first favorite movie.
Boy, was I disappointed. I walked out of there thinking, what? I just got scammed.
Really?
I got scammed.
I love this movie.
This movie's made for old people.
Well, also, the same. Keep in mind, I was 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
7 or 8. And I
you
loved it.
All
this
the
movie.
Singing and dancing didn't bother you?
I loved it. I'm shocked more people didn't, more like my, maybe they did. Maybe they, for all I know, they did. More of my family members didn't think I was gay because I loved this movie. I loved it. I want the soundtrack.
Did you like other musicals too?
Suddenly.
Did you love Barbara Streisand?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I actually had a very, 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 I don't even like musicals now. I had a very limited palette for musicals, but man, oh man, did I love Little Shop of Horrors.
Did you force it on yourself? Did you be like,
no, I loved
you
it.
You were probably disappointed. You're like, no, I don't care. I'm gonna
no,
like it.
No, dude,
I'm
loved
gonna,
it. I loved
like it.
It.
I like it.
I was 7 I years like old. I didn't take a lot of forcing. I didn't like it. Let's move back onto Transformers. Suddenly Seymour.
You done?
Is standing beside you.
Stop it, Brian. No,
don't need no makeup.
Brian, stop it. Please. It's making me uncomfortable. I don't know what to do when people sing.
Come on, Anderson. Pick up that line.
Number one for me.
Audrey, too. How great would it be to have a meat-eating plant? You eat your enemies?
I have one. I have a little Venus flytrap in my house.
Yeah, but if it was bigger, you'd eat your enemies. It's pretty good. Dispose of all evidence of your murders.
Mm-hmm. I could just bury them. It's the same thing.
What happens when the rains come?
You know, the best thing about having Aubrey is like you could just play dumb and be it was him. I... didn't even know about it until just now.
And he's like, what? What are you talking about?
Stop
like,
it, Brian. Stop it. See, it's racist.
I know. I'm trying to Levi Stubbs.
Stop it. Number one for me. How do you feel about Percy in Green Mile?
Oh, Mr. Jangles?
We hate Percy.
Mr. Jangles.
We mainly hate Percy because of the crime that he committed against.
He made him a number one Weasley character.
Mr. Jangles from 1999's Green Mile is probably my favorite.
Good call.
Pet. I just love the way that he interacted with his owner, Edward Delacroix, played by Michael Jeter.
That's right. Died of AIDS.
Died of AIDS. And Mr. Jangles, or Jangles as he says, it's actually Mr. Jingles.
Mr. Jingles.
But he calls him Mr. Jangles, was a trained mouse. In fact, he was about 30 trained mice, Brian. They used about 30 different mice. And he was on a list of mine before, so I'm not, you know, reinventing the wheel here, but he had that kind of effect on me. That movie, Green Mile, gets better with age, I think.
I think it's another one where there's 30 minutes of great stuff. And there's
I remember walking out. I saw it in Seattle with my best friend and his wife at the time. And she's still his wife and he's still my best friend. I saw the movie, walked out of the theater. And I remember thinking, you know what? It's just not good enough to be up for Best Picture. It's really good, but it's
awesome
missing
movie.
Something. It's almost awesome. And then I was shamed when it was up for Best Picture. So I felt like a fool. But
Percy was my number one Weasley character and also my number five douchiest character.
A lot of Green Mile has found itself on a few of our top five lists. And for good reason, because like Buffalo Bill. Is that his name? Buffalo Bill? Wild Bill. Sam Rockwell. First time I'd ever seen that man. And boy, was I taken. I was smitten with Sam Rockwell.
David Morris
movie.
Is great in that. Percy and, of course, Tom Hanks. James Cromwell.
Most importantly, Mr. Jangles. And Mr. Jangles, the little cute mouse who...
Like Clark Duncan, R.I.P.
You do. You actually feel for it to the point where like I might have welled up a little bit. And then he's a through line, too. We get to see him many, many years later. And Mr. Jangles really, he found a spot in my heart. And not just my heart, Brian, many people's hearts, because he even has his own Facebook page.
Mr. Jangles?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Jangles?
Go ahead, friend that old Mr. Jangles, his profile
I'm
picture.
I'm not doing a very good Cajun accent.
His profile.
Mr. Jangles.
His profile pic. His profile picture is he's in mid-stride doing one of his little circus tricks with a little spool.
A little wheel.
A little empty spool of thread. Love that, Mr. Jangles.
He's trained.
Oh, it's amazing what cinema can do for a little mouse on the big screen. You know what I mean? They really brought that little mouse.
Yeah, that was a real moment.
All right. Pretty solid list, I think. Decent list.
Not bad.
I'd like to have most of all those lists, maybe without the monkey.
I do not want to have... I feel like Gizmo is too big of a risk for me things to go wrong.
You probably fuck up. I want Rabbit on a chain.
Yeah, you probably
Small boy on a chain.
Ultimately, Audrey 2 would be too much to handle.
Eamon Farron on the end of a chain would be an odd pet. I don't want the snake
Even
either.
Stitch would be trouble.
I would want Sam from I Am Legend, and I would want Hachi if I stayed alive.
I could do
and
Precious.
I would like Mr. Jingles.
I like Precious.
And you know what? I would like Ella, the monkey, if I could detrain her for being jealous.
Precious would be a really good conversation piece. Hey, you know where this dog came from? Let me tell you a story.
Let me tell you All right. Here we go.
All right. Listener top five.
All right. We got a 4-way tie for number 4. Hmm. Starting with Mad Max's dog from The Road Warrior.
That's just the dog.
Unmemorable.
We got Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
Tight.
Got Cujo.
Tight.
Cujo.
And Milo from The Mask.
Now, I'm glad they made the list because The Mask is a bit of an underrated movie.
Get out.
What it is. What,
are you saying this out loud?
The Mask is not bad.
It's a horrible, horrible, horrible movie. It's a terrible movie.
Wait, you think it's horrible?
It's fucking awful. It's god awful. It's worse than Dumb and Dumber.
You can say it's paint
it's
by numbers,
terrible.
But it's not awful.
It's terrible. It's a really bad movie.
We're talking about the Jim Carrey movie?
Yes. And then The Mask too, and then Baby Mask, and then I think...
I think you're associating the sequels.
No. I saw the first one, and I was on a lot of meth, and I was like, yeah, why don't you just come out and say that's what it is? This is drugs. He's doing drugs. He's not putting on a stupid green mask and acting silly. He's doing drugs. Say it.
And the dog does drugs.
Yeah,
everyone does
Milo
drugs.
Gets the mask on.
Yeah.
Milo's good.
Stupid.
All right, number 3.
I guess I got a little bit carried away. It's not that big a deal.
It's really not that big of a deal. Just, you got to calm down.
That was the first time I ever saw Cameron Diaz.
She was perfect in that movie. And the fact that he turned out to be Cameron Diaz actually shows a little bit of range.
I hate that movie.
Number 3 is Baxter from Anchorman.
Baxter Burgundy.
You made an entire wheel of cheese.
Now this is happening.
Number 2 is the Gimp from Pulp Fiction.
This is happening.
Mm-hmm. The Gimp.
And the number 1 pet as voted on by our list.
Wait, what's going on? There's a bunch of. There's only 3? What's happening?
It's a 4-way tie for number 4. And then the number 1 pet as voted on by our listeners is Gizmo from Gremlins.
Yeah, there you go.
I almost had him, but then when you a lot of time with these lists, like
if so I'm, many also rans.
If I got a ton of also rans, I'm like, I'm not gonna put one that's so obvious at the top, right?
Right.
Gizmo would be sweet though, but you're right. You'd have to give him like a wetsuit or something. Well, yeah. That would be bad.
Yeah, at that point, why you'd even have
to, he'd be the gizmo in the bubble.
Do you want to do the also rans?
Of course.
Preacher's Parrot from Deep Blue Sea, the parrot on LL Cool J's shoulder. The Rancor of Deathlock. I'm surprised it didn't make the list, actually. From Return of the Jedi. Also, Salacious Crumb.
Salacious Crumb, I thought for sure was going to be on your list.
Yeah. The Cat from Alien, I could not put that in. Mm. Although that's where Save the Cat comes from, Anderson. Save the Cat. Mr. Bigglesworth. Mr. Bigglesworth. Mm. Mustin Powers. The Kingsman. God, for God's sake. The dog, JB. The little pug from Kingsman.
Yes.
The monkey from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Scraps from Airplane 2. The dog from The Artist, Toothless, Beethoven, and the monkey from Pirates of the Caribbean was very important to the plot. The pigs from Hannibal, that was a close one for me. I was putting the pigs.
The
from
pigs.
Hannibal. The pigs.
That would just been dark.
The man-eating
just
pigs.
A dark choice.
The beast from, where's the beast from Sandlot? I thought I'd make
he's
the
on my also
list.
Ran list. The top didn't of it, actually, if you list. Must know.
Mr. Hercules. Whiskers and Bosco from The Voices. Caligula's horse. Einstein, Back to the Future.
Still going.
John Wick's dog. Mm-hmm. Toto, of course, Wizard of Oz. Course, yeah. Right. Shithead the dog from The Jerk. Almost on the list. I just wanted to say Shithead the dog. Remy from Ratatouille. The rabbit from Fatal Attraction.
You close.
The turtles from Rocky. Mm. Snots, Christmas Vacation. Mm-hmm. The chihuahua from Crimson Tide. And Frank and Weenie.
Frank. Here's my, I got the Hercules there. I'm going to try not to do repeats of ones you just did. Hogan. Hogan from White God. That was a great dog.
White dog.
Hogan. Hogan was great. Vito's cat and Godfather. And I love the story behind that, too, that wasn't even in the script, but Mr. Francis Ford Coppola found this stray cat on the Paramount lot.
No, it wasn't Francis Ford Coppola. It was the actor. It was Brando.
I thought it was Coppola.
I thought it was Brando.
Whatever.
Well, whatever.
Either way,
found
it was
the
a
day
stray
of.
Cat found on the Paramount lot. Also, the horse's head in Godfather. That was a pet at one
that
point.
Was a pet at one point.
No, but actually the horse in Black Stallion, the actual horse. It's stitched there, but you already said that. Mad Max star, that was said by the listener. Also from George Miller, Babe. Did you say Babe?
Did not say Babe.
Keanu from Keanu. That was the best thing about that movie. It was kind of a letdown, but Keanu was great. Toothless is on there. Santa's Little Helper. Look at that. Hooch from Turner and Hooch. Salacious Crumb. I thought for sure you were going to say that. The acrobatic cat in Cat's Eye, but I don't know if that was anyone's pet. I think it was just like I don't know if it was Drew Barrymore. I think it ended up being Drew Barrymore's pet at the end. Cat's Eye. The pup in the short Feast.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that short
I've
yet?
Not seen Feast.
What a great little puppy. What a great
is that
little
for
pet.
Big Hero 6?
Elliot and Pete's Dragon. And finally, the blind man's Rottweiler in Don't Breathe.
Also ran from the listeners. We got...
We have also rants from listeners now. That's a new thing.
The three animals from Homeward Bound.
All of them were tortured.
Is that true?
I try not to have like Clyde on there from Everything, Every Which Way But Loose because animal torture doesn't, I don't jive with it. Yeah.
Falcor and Atreyu from The Never Ending Story.
Are they pets or like equals? They're like friends.
Probably equals.
Yeah.
I don't think Falcor considers himself a
pet. Yeah, I think he'd be pissed.
We've got Fido.
It's like, I'm a noble flying dog. Yeah.
Doug from Up.
No,
your fucking pet.
And
Babe, the blind man's Rottweiler, and Don't Breathe. Hey guys, don't sleep on Don't Breathe because that's a
that
good
trailer
fucking
looked
movie.
Great.
It's a real. Actually,
will say the trailer
it's funny because I've seen the trailer a number of times, and I saw it before Sausage Party, and the idiot couple behind me were laughing maniacally, talking about how stupid it looked, and I'm like, you know what?
Looks pretty good.
It's fresh. It's new, and it's actually very, very
actually,
good.
Actually, it's got a little bit of the end of Silence of the Lambs to it.
And the Rottweiler in it does things that I've never seen before.
Got a 91% on Rotten Tomato.
Is it that high?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, it's. I was saying it's probably top 10 of films that I've seen in theaters so far this year. I'm sure it'll get knocked out, but it's probably top 10.
Wow.
For sure top 15. Don't Breathe. Don't sleep on it. Good.
Don't sleep on Don't Breathe.
We covered it on Cinemadix.
Don't sleep on Don't Breathe.
We covered it on Cinemadix. What were you saying about Don't Breathe and Silence of the Lambs?
I said the premise or the action, the stuff that I saw in the trailer seemed very similar to Silence of the Lambs.
That night vision stuff in there,
We're gambling?
Yeah. Last week, you guys gambled on War Dogs. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 61%. Anderson bid 67 and Brian, 85.
This may be a mistake.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomatoes score for War Dogs is 60%, making Anderson the winner for the sixth time in a row.
Tight.
You are on quite the streak.
Good. Except for the tie.
I think Logan's won twice since you've won last.
Jesus Christ. You're definitely cheating, right?
Yes, cheating away. The counselor.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Come up. Yeah, that's what you get. For I can't believe you haven't seen it. You got to stick to your guns. It's your most number one most anticipated fall movie.
I don't like movies.
And you didn't see it by your favorite director and you skipped it. Shame on you. Go watch The Counselor. You'll love it.
How does one see The Counselor?
Some people love it.
Damn it.
Some people love it.
Okay.
The Counselor. Enjoy.
All right. This week, you're gambling on The Mechanic Resurrection.
Oh, this looks good. Well, this looks...
And that's just because you've already seen Don't Breathe.
This could be one of the...
Don't Breathe, 91.
This could be one of those movies where, like, the critics, like, it is what it is, you know what I mean?
You say this, like, every other week, pretty much. You realize you're...
96%.
All right, that's Brian. He's locked. No, I'm he's
not.
Locked.
I haven't written anything down. Logan, gonna test. I have not written anything down. I wrote down 96. That's funny. That's visual humor for a podcast.
What'd you do?
I haven't written it down yet.
Oh, you typed in 96 for yourself? Only you can, not even Logan can see it.
Literally a joke.
No one can see it except for you.
And it's me.
And it was hilarious. Please just make it 96 now. Go.
Heinz 57.
Wow.
I think it is what it is.
38.
Okay.
38.
All right, well, currently, the week before its release, The Mechanic Resurrection has zero reviews with no Rotten Tomato score.
Wait, the movie comes out tomorrow?
Good sign.
Oh, good sign.
I don't know if critics would actually even show up.
You're going to run out of movies.
Mm. No, I will never ever run out of movies.
Actually, impossible for a guy like that. Thank you very much to all you guys for checking us out, listening this week. Also, thank you to Jonathan O for the listener art. Let me check out Jonathan O's listener. That's good. It's good. Simple. Simple and effective. Thank you, Jonathan O. That's pretty good.
Not knowingly.
No. Did you read how it was spelled?
Oh, he's making fun of my knowledge knowingly, or lack thereof.
Knowingly.
All right.
Thanks again, Matt Carter, for the topic. Hey, guys, if you have a topic in mind, such as top five pets or something a little more esoteric, send it to us or post it on FilmBalk, Facebook.com/TheFilmBalt or tweet it to us at TheFilmBalt on Twitter.
When am I going to do a summer wrap-up? That's coming up soon.
Soon, right?
Next week, right?
Next week?
Okay. Hot.
What?
Sure.
Did you say not?
I said what?
I thought you said not.
No, I didn't say not. I said what? Go to AndersonandBryan.com to do your Amazon shopping. If you wanted to get us something on Amazon, just click through the banner right there at the top, and we get a few pennies, and you get the satisfaction of knowing you helped out a little independent podcast. We appreciate it, you guys. Thank you.
Sorry for all the ads this week. That's a real irregularity on this show. We try and have them spread out, and I'm not exactly sure. Still, I don't think any of us are really sure why they're all jammed down our throat this week.
They're stacked.
It's the by far the most we've ever done. We don't plan on doing that many again. I can't tell you how many people that work in the podcasting world, because I still have a lot of friends and I do other shows and whatnot, and I tell them, you know, we max out at this number. They're like, oh, you got to do way more than that. I'm like, well, we're not an ad show. Yeah. I don't want to be doing that.
I don't like that either.
Maybe we're stupid. Maybe that's...
No, we definitely are. Okay. Yeah. Thanks to the Mayberry Shift, Caveman Octopus, Bisonti, Sean Russell, a funk band named Machete, and The Lounge Act for being our featured artist this week. Thank you, guys. Groupers the movie.com. Check it out. And until next time.
We do it for Van Gogh. It was mine, fucking around for the life.